Hey, editing Zach, when you hear that sound, it's because I'm trying to eat the microphone. Because it looked like cotton candy, but it not.
What was the sound?
How?
I don't know if I got that, Cassie. Can I get it a couple more times?
How? How? Because really, in actuality, it would be...
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Hark, who is my doctor?
And verily well met, who is indeed? Mine appointance be Zachary, and I knowest a lot about Doctor Who.
Oh no, now I have to do a thing.
What might your accountance be, m'lady?
My name's Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And we are speaking...
Do you like that I started the bit and then shot the bit?
Yes. Today's episode is The Shakespeare Code. We are series 3, episode 2, our second story with Martha.
Yay.
I don't remember what our last historical was.
Was it Wolves at Midnight?
Tooth and Claw. The last one was The Girl in the Fireplace.
Okay.
That was the last one that we did that was us going back in time. But this probably has a very... it's not the exact same vibe because Tooth and Claw was during the Victorian era. And this is during the
Shakespearean era!
Yes, the Elizabethan... the first Elizabethan era, as we have just left the second one. So let's go into the Cassie Perfassi a little bit here.
Those of you counting at home, right now I have 30 out of 54 guesses correct.
Hooray, you're doing quite well.
I am.
Yeah, you're... let's see how I can break you today. So, as the title suggests, this episode, they meet one who, Billiam Shakespeare.
Never heard of him.
Which, that's unfortunate because the Cassie Professor required some Shakespearean knowledge, and I thought you might have that given your degree in theater.
Zach, I don't use my degree. I have it. I don't use it.
Well, let's see if you... Because this question could be really easy if you happen to know this.
I don't know theater. I simply passed my classes on a wish and a prayer.
Well, this one might be an interesting question then, because this has an answer rooted in reality. And I'm curious to know if you just happen to know the answer to this then, because this story revolves around a sequel to one of Shakespeare's plays that was never released. Would you like to guess the name of the new one or what it's a sequel to?
I'm really trying to figure out a companion name for Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet?
Well, no, I was going to say Womeo. That's what happens when, you know, they both wake up in hell. Whoa.
Zombio and Juliet?
No, because this feels like a Henry VIII sort of thing. Or like, what's that one? Because I know that there were a lot of Henry plays.
I mean, there were a lot of... He named a lot of plays after kings, and some of them had like parts one and parts two.
So there is a part of me that does feel like this is a king.
Okay.
How do you mean never released?
Never released might be the wrong term, but it was put on lists of his plays at the time, but for some unknown reason isn't in any of the published folios.
What I'm really angry about is I feel like this was the plot of that musical that we went to go see like 2 years ago. Not Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, Something's Rotten.
Something's Rotten, yes. Something Rotten.
Yes.
Not Something Is. Something Rotten. I feel like that was part of the plot, but I cannot for the life of me remember what the name of the play is. Can I phone a friend?
Can you phone a friend?
Can I phone a friend?
How about I narrow it down for you?
Okay.
Okay, so there's... I don't want to narrow it down to 3 because I feel like that might be too low, so I'm going to give you 5.
Okay. I will say I'm at a disadvantage. I have a headache.
Okay, so I'm going to give you 5 different plays.
Uh-huh.
I will let you pick which one it is, and I will give you a bonus point if you can guess the title of the sequel.
Okay.
So, the options are Hamlet.
Uh-huh.
Love's Labor's Lost.
Uh-huh.
Twelfth Night.
Uh-huh.
Much Ado About Nothing.
Sure.
Or Antony and Cleopatra.
Something to do about something else.
Much Ado About Something.
How about everything to do with this one thing? I believe it's Antony and Cleopatra.
Okay.
I don't know the sequel, dude.
Okay, so your guess is that it is a sequel to Antony and Cleopatra, and you're just bypassing the bonus point.
Yeah, I don't have... Listen, Zach, my brain is made out of... You know, like, the stuff that's left on a stage after a show? So it's just big chunks of dust and glitter and strands of hair and pieces of wig and feathers and stuff. That's what my brain is made out of.
Yeah.
It is theatrical content, but you can't actually do anything with
it. Your brain is just the flowers that have been thrown to actors on stage.
Yeah, it's just stepped on.
It's all just thorns now. It's all that's left. People don't even bother taking the thorns off these flowers and throwing to actors.
No.
It's a mixture. It's also
a mixture of thrown flowers and tomatoes, yeah, ironically enough.
I had to say there's probably tomatoes in there, too.
Yeah. After a while, the tomatoes and the flowers just kind of look the same.
Well, the good news is this next one is a little less of a historical check and more just...
A vibe check.
I guess it is a bit of a vibe check. So we know that at the end of Tooth and Claw, Queen Victoria kicked out the Doctor. So we know that Queen Victoria does not care much for the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But in this episode, they meet a different queen. They meet Queen Elizabeth. Queen mm-hmm. Elizabeth I. How do you think she and the Doctor might get along?
Hmm. What an interesting little question. Thank you so much for asking that, Zach. I've been putting a lot of thought to this. I think that the Doctor and Queen Elizabeth II.
The first. There's only been 2 Queens Elizabeth and one just died.
The other
one lives forever.
In our hearts.
There's only been 2 Queens Elizabeth. One tells nothing but truths. The other one tells nothing but lies.
Because part of me does want to say that Queen Victoria left notes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it is most likely and most probable that distaste towards the Doctor is hereditary. So I don't think that Queen Elizabeth is... takes too kindly to the Doctor.
Okay, so you think Queen Elizabeth dislikes the Doctor, and the important sequel in this is a sequel to Antony and Cleopatra, one of Shakespeare's final tragedies.
Yes, that is correct, Zach.
And we will find out together if that is the case as we watch The Shakespeare Code.
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by the Mood Ring 2.0. Hey folks, are you dealing with a bunch of new emotions that you don't know how to describe? Well, the Mood Ring 2.0 will tell you when you're feeling any of these new moods. For example, I'm feeling a little flurngle right now, and maybe you're feeling a little pumply. And don't you just hate when you're feeling pedangled? The Mood Ring 2.0 is loaded with all kinds of these new feelings, like spoinky, herbaflurba, and of course, anxiety. Never forget when you're feeling flemishous with the Mood Ring 2.0. Back to the episode.
And we are back from the Shakespeare Code.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? 'Tis the Doctor.
And Martha
is the sun?
And Martha is cock-blocked?
Yeah.
Blue-balled? Blue-balled? Yeah, that is part of the reason why I think Martha is everyone's second favorite, because she has an unrequited crush on the Doctor, and the Doctor does not get over Rose.
Yeah, I mean, that...
Which isn't a problem, but
it's not a problem with her. I would say that that's a problem with the Doctor.
Yeah, I will say that it's just a thing that I kind of wish wasn't there. And I think that's why not to spoil too much, but Donna is just a friend. There is no romantic connection there. And I think that's why Donna's remembered more fondly, is that she's not pining after the Doctor. So I think that there's a level of disappointment in this is a romance that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, well, because Donna's also fucking batshit crazy. Martha is an intellectual equal.
Yes. You can really get the feel that she clearly doesn't know as much as the Doctor, but she wants to know as much as the Doctor.
She's very eager to learn.
Yeah, and the way she approaches things is from a very intellectual standpoint. This, like, you know, she comes out of the TARDIS and she's like, shouldn't I be worried about the butterfly effect? Like, should I... Like, if I step on a butterfly, change the course of the human race.
She even asks at that point, too, like, do I need to be worried about me? Am I going to be someone's slave? And he goes, nah, this era of England is very different.
There is some precious white boy energy when he goes, why?
Yeah.
Honey, you've been in the UK long enough and often enough to know why.
Yeah, I mean, I also will say, I think that's just a product of this episode being in 2007.
Check your Time Lord privilege.
Yeah, good old JK.
Oof, yeah, that one.
I feel the need to address that right up front. Let's just get it out of the way.
This episode is honestly pretty good. The albatross hanging around it is that JK Rowling has so thoroughly torched her reputation that it hurts the credulity of the Doctor being one who travels in time to not know how much J.K. Rowling sucks now.
Especially since they both talk about Harry Potter as this is an episode that has to do with magic. I think the first episode that we've seen that has to do with magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same sort of magic as Tooth and Claw had werewolves. Okay. It's not real magic. It's science, but the way they explain it is it's science, but instead of using math, it uses words.
That's called magic, Zach. There's power in words, fucking manifestation, look it up. But anyways, I digress. They're talking about Harry Potter and magic. And the Doctor says, like, just wait until you read the 7th book. I cried, which... Me too, bud. I can't think of anybody who didn't cry in the 7th book.
Yeah, because this episode came out 4 months before the 7th book came out.
Mm.
The 7th book came out in July. This episode came out in March of 2007. Like, and also of its time, in the moment, J.K. Rowling appeared to be like impervious.
I mean, she was kind of top of the world. Like, even at that moment in time, she was doing some decent work for women's rights and being a women's advocate, which is really fucking ironic.
Yeah. It's also really sad that the person who says it is David Tennant, someone who is so strongly pro-trans rights that it's just like, man, that really sucks.
Well, yeah, but it's also, this was 2007. We didn't know.
Yeah, nobody knew. And like, I'm not blaming anyone.
It's just a, that's kind of sad. Yeah, but just
And the sad thing is, even if they had just left it with the line about the 7th book, like, is that like, that's like a fun joke? Because yeah, you probably, like, even if you dislike J.K. Rowling, some people still have really strong attachments to the book.
I'm people.
But...
The books aren't very good, but they're mine, damn it.
Well, they're for children. They like attack. They speak to a child. They speak to a child.
Are you calling me a child?
Yes. But I mean, there is also something kind of funny to assume that something happened that where now the time stream has fucked up. J.K. Rowling has thrown off the time stream from Doctor Who.
I still stand by. I think that we are in an alternate dimension. We're in the bad dimension.
This is the bad place.
No, sincerely, though, I really very strongly believe in that. But
yeah,
this is not the conversation that we're talking about. Even if they had just stuck with references to Harry Potter, it would have been absolutely fine.
Yeah, and it was.
It wasn't until the line of good old JK.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
yeah, it's
I cannot be an apologist for Harry Potter anymore after that.
Which it really shows how much she's poisoned her own well by the fact that we have to talk about three words hurting the episode this much. Like, just the words, frankly, good old JK.
Frankly, it's just the word good in front of everything else.
Yeah.
Because at this point...
Wait. New plan. He, in the moment, remembered J.K. Simmons and was just thinking to himself about how much he enjoys performances from actor J.K. Simmons.
And how wonderful he would have sounded saying Expelliarmus.
The doctor had an ADHD moment.
I would have put it past him.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other sad thing is the doctor comes from a culture of trans people.
Yes.
Time Lords regenerate into new bodies and new genders all the time.
Yeah.
Let's hop off the J.K. Rowling problematic train here.
Oh, no.
Oh, we got it. Hot, hot. Oh, hot takes here. Hot, hot. Ooh, hot takes here. Moreover, let's talk about the episode proper instead of J.K. Rowling and all of her many failings. Let's talk about, what did you think of the witches, the Carrionites?
When you have a makeup as good as the Jadoon right before, and then you have these Spirit Halloween witches, I don't expect anybody to ever look like that in life. And if you do, if you know somebody who does... don't let them hear this episode. But there is just a quality about the particular makeups that they were using that looked so unbelievably fake.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I know that this is supposed to be, they're all supposed to be what we look as the, like, idea of a witch.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're Carrionites. They're supposed to be bird-like.
Yeah, when you see the effects, especially, they've elongated the chin to really give it, like, a proper beak feel.
The chin and the nose, but they also had really pointy teeth.
Yeah.
Which I didn't...
Which,
I don't... Anytime that prosthetics enlist the help of teeth, I get worried.
Yeah.
And I say that because 9 times out of 10, unless you're doing bigger teeth, mm-hmm. like what they did with Jim Carrey in The Mask... He has these gigantic cartoonish teeth to change not only his, like, smile, but the shape of his jaw. And there's a lot of work that the teeth are doing. That is a good use of the teeth. Anytime you have a show with vampires, you need the fangs. But when you are trying to cover up teeth, human teeth, to make them look not human... by putting more teeth on top, it just looks bad. And therefore, it makes the rest of the makeup look bad as well.
I don't think it was as bad on the two that were consistently, like, fully done up. But the girl who generally looked normal, and then they just kind of put a face on top of her face.
Which, it looked wrong.
Yeah.
Because even the paint was all wrong.
Well, because I don't think they, like, made up her neck very well. And
no, it was the...
So there's, like, a clear line of, like, where the makeup ends.
A lot of her very deep wrinkles were around, like, the top of her head,
mm-hmm.
which is a spot where skin tends to wrinkle, but not that much, not that bad.
Because
if your forehead is that wrinkled, you most definitely have lines around your face, around your, like, your jowls, your neck, especially your neck. Because if you have such... is in makeup, if you have such deep receded wrinkles, it's because you have an excess of skin
mm-hmm.
that then, because gravity is a thing, drags down, and you would have way more jowl and way more neck and things around your chest. And it just, for whatever reason, that part of the makeup was skipped.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either to save time or just to...
Well, I could probably tell you why. This episode, at the time, was the most expensive episode of Doctor Who ever made.
Is it because of the globe?
Well, actually, the globe was not that expensive. They just filmed in the new Globe Theater.
Oh, well.
But it was because of all of the other sets. Like whatever room they're in with Shakespeare.
When they're in the Renaissance Fair.
Yeah. When they're in the tavern, when they're on the street. Like, all of that stuff was sets they had to make. And it was, you know, it's very big, so there's a lot of extras, a lot of costumes.
Yeah.
So... It was an incredibly expensive episode.
It was immersive.
Yeah, it was very well done.
There were just some elements that were meh.
And they got their money out of it in the end, because one of the rooms, I believe the room where they're talking to Shakespeare, they basically just redecorated it and it became the attic in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Okay.
So they ended up using that set for 5 years. So they got their money out of it eventually, but in the immediate it was super expensive, and so I'm sure that they were like, we have to cut something somewhere, and so they stripped down the makeup budget.
I'm sure that they cut down bits and pieces from everyone's budget.
But they got to film in the new Globe Theater. This was actually the first production that wasn't a stage production being done in the show. This was the first production that got to film in the new Globe Theater.
Okay, that's kind
of
neat.
Yeah, and they had, but because of that, they had, because the Globe Theater was being used for plays, though, they could only film at night. So after morning rehearsals, after the night show, they could only film after all of that was over. So it's lit up like that via effects, and well, it's lit up like that inside, and they have an effect to make you see the sky.
I thought so, because I went back and forth the entire time on if this was the actual Globe Theater, or, you know, the new old.
Yeah, because the original burned down.
R.I.P. There were a lot of times where I was looking at it going, it would astound me if they didn't use that, because that's a set that's in the UK.
Yeah.
Like, that's a place that exists that you can go to and film and mm-hmm. do things, because there was a quality about it that looked like the lighting was off. But that makes sense then, that the lighting was off, because the lighting was artificial daytime.
Yeah, it was also that normally the show films in Wales, which is cheaper to film in, but because nothing in Wales looks like 1599 London, they had to go film in London. And so just the cost of filming there is more expensive.
Mm.
For what it's worth, if you can strip out that good old JK line, or as we are choosing to do, make it about JK Simmons.
We can just call it the just kidding line.
Yeah. Lol, JK. But if you drop that line, I think the episode more or less holds up. There was one thing, so that argument where Lilith and the Doctor are fighting that ends in her, like, tapping his heart to death.
Mm-hmm.
That was originally supposed to be a sword fight. But when the stunt performers were rehearsing it, the stunt actress for Lilith accidentally stabbed the stunt actor for David Tennant in the eye. And so they rewrote it, and instead it just became her, like, pretending to seduce him, I suppose. Which, in fairness, it works. I think it might work even better. I don't know what a sword fight would have accomplished there.
That just would have looked cool.
Yeah.
But I like in this context, or I like... Because earlier in the episode, we do see Martha and the Doctor, like, sharing a bed because they only have one bed. And he goes, oh, we'll make do.
And then he plops himself dead center in the bed, like a cat.
But you see both of them laying down in the bed, and she's very into it, but he just kind of goes, nah.
He literally goes, there's something staring me in the face and I just can't see it. I don't know what it is.
Rose could see
it. Rose would know.
Yeah, and rightfully, she gets mad and just kind of huffs as she turns over and blows out the candle. But even when Lilith is trying to seduce him, he's just like, I see what you're doing and it's not going to work on me.
The great irony of Martha having, like, Pat is, like, magically passed out on the floor behind her right now. Otherwise she would have gone, yeah, I know.
It worked because we've already seen them using these scary little dolls with people's hair and different
Yeah, they didn't have them do too much. They got to do like a couple of spells that mostly did stuff that was really obvious, like put someone to sleep, or in one case, drown someone on dry land.
Which doesn't work. I've tried it.
But even then, like the rules around most of them are effectively these little voodoo dolls they have.
Not voodoo, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, they're not that. They even establish that they're like the doctor even says they're DNA replicators or something.
Oh, they're just dolls.
Yeah. But the little dolls that are. Well, I called them that because they have to do things to the dolls to affect them in the way.
Well,
that,
yeah, but voodoo is an entirely different section absolutely. Of magic, because I will have you know, I am really holding myself back from. Casplaining magic to you, because I know that that's not something that anybody wants to hear.
No, go for it.
No, because I also don't want you to be sitting here rolling your eyes at me and making me feel bad about the things I do or do not do.
Yeah, I will say, I know that it's not a voodoo doll. I was more just using that as an explainer, because if I say that, you know what it is.
Yeah, but it's inaccurate. But
yes, it is culturally inaccurate. It is more. I'm using it more as a shorthand than I am as a truism.
It was the Shakespeare doll that really got me giggling, because she also has him write, but the doll's little hand is just kind of like freaking out. It's kind of
jiggling around.
It's just kind of freaking out. And like, that is exactly what typing a paper at 3 in the morning feels like. It's just something's happening. I'm looking up to see when Stardust came out. Oh, cool. That was also 2007.
So these would have been filming at about the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, because something that I always liked is in that one, too, there's also witches in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they also use the dolls to, like, to fuck with the family, basically. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite effects in that was basically drowning the doll. And as the doll is drowning, I think it's the fourth son is, like, floating in midair because his doll is floating in the water. So it's just the use of dolls and water in both contexts. Mm-hmm. I like, because it's frightening.
I guess we can call them hex dolls. Maybe that works out as a
that
better
phrase. Yeah. Yes.
I'll say hex dolls for this case then, just so I don't want to step out of line. Can we talk a little bit about how Shakespeare is such a little fuckboy?
Oh my god, Shakespeare was kind of hot.
And he seemed to think he was, too.
Oh, my God. He had such nice hair.
And he got, like, a well-groomed beard.
Oh, my God. He was like you, but better.
Those are two things I'm known for. Nice hair and having a beard.
Mm-hmm. Those are your only two qualities.
That is true. And I'm glad that this is a podcast that lets me use my hair and beard to good effect.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can see it.
Yep. Everyone knows that those are your two most identifiable traits based off of our podcast.
I really enjoy that he's apparently progressive for his time. Like when he's introduced to Martha, he first calls her a blackamoor, I think is what he says.
Yeah.
But she's like, excuse me? And so he starts rolling off the other terms he knows for black people. And none of them are like said with malice. He just seems to, that's what he calls them right now.
Yeah, that's what it's the like, ooh, yeah, not awesome for today, but it's.
You're trying, bud.
It's $15.99. Yeah. Like, that is as good as we're going to get.
Yeah, it's one of those, maybe focus less on the choice of word and more the spirit of them. And the spirit is he would like to get in her pants.
Hmm.
There's also a fun few bits where the doctor is quoting Shakespeare around Shakespeare, but it's not stuff he's written yet, so he asks if he can take the line.
I did like that.
He quoted something Shakespeare had already written. He's like, I should take that. Oh, wait, I already did write it. Because there's something very authentic about a writer forgetting the thing that they wrote.
Mm-hmm. I forget things I say
in this half podcast.
In this podcast. And I know that there are things that I say that are good because then people will call me out on them on the internet platform that I don't see. Another thing I really, really liked was when Shakespeare tells the doctor, he asks him, how can a man so young have eyes so old? And it's like, wow, so profound. Yes, because despite the body regenerating, the eyes and the soul are the same. Mm-hmm. But the doctor's response is simply, I do a lot of reading. Like, oh, we're going to diminish the existential nature of that comment. I got it. Okay.
I think it's also that the doctor doesn't have time to unpack all of that for William Shakespeare.
Yeah, but then fast forward to the end, and he's very aware that the doctor and Martha are not of his time.
Yeah.
Can't imagine what gave that away.
Could it be the denim blue jeans that she comes in wearing?
And the pink camisole with the red leather jacket?
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I remember when they went to, I mean, later on in time, they went to Charles Dickens' time, and Eccleston was like, you're not going to go out dressed like that. You're going to put on something appropriate to the era. Go get some clothes out of the back. And this one, he's just like, nah, you're good. Just come out in your jeans and camisole like you own the place. It's good.
Well, because his intention was to, they weren't going to stay that long.
Yeah. But it is just kind of funny remembering the fit Eccleston threw about the clothes.
He just wanted to show off his closet.
Yeah. Another good moment between the doctor and Shakespeare was when Shakespeare basically asked if he and the doctor could get entangled romantically. And the doctor's response was,
oh, 57 academics just punched the air.
And there's a part of it that's like, that's a good joke.
That's a great joke. It's even better when you remember that Shakespeare's the first bard. And every bard in every context is horny for anything that moves.
Shakespeare is the bard all D&D bards aspire to be.
Yes.
But something else that I really enjoyed in this is their exploration of the power of words. Beacuas, at the beginning of Hamlet, it's not Hamlet, Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
Or the forbidden play. I don't do stage anymore, so I can say it however I like. McDonald's. There you go.
McDuck. Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, in McDonald's.
Oh, God, Scrooge McDuck, David Tennant, all makes sense now.
The spell at the beginning of that play is also inspired by real-life witchcraft of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why so many people believe that play to be cursed, is because if you believe in the power of words, if you believe in witchcraft...
The power of voodoo?
No, Zach, we've just been over this. That's a different thing. Voodoo?
Do what?
Remind me of...
The bard?
The bard. But yeah, that's why so many people think that McDonald's is a cursed play, because of the actual witchcraft that is being performed on the stage before or at the very tippy-toppy of the play.
Yeah.
And so I do like that this, or the Shakespeare's lost play, is lost because of...
Witchcraft.
Of witchcraft,
and
yeah.
also written before he writes Macbeth and...
McDonald's,
and sorry, before he writes McDonald's and Hamlet.
Hamnet.
Yeah, two plays featuring witches.
Yeah. I do genuinely also forget and laugh every time whenever I hear that his son's name is Hamnet.
Yeah, Hamnet Shakespeare.
It's so funny. He sounds fake. Hamnet.
All names are made up.
Hamnet. This episode is brought to you by Hamnet.
Ham.net.
Yeah.
Be a good sponsor too.
Ham on demand.
There was an interesting little drop of lore, I don't know if you caught it or not. When the Carrionite puts Martha to sleep, she tries putting the doctor to sleep by saying the doctor. But the doctor does not work, because his name is not the doctor.
Yeah, I caught that. And even when Lilith is putting Martha to sleep, she intends to kill her, I believe. And she goes, oh, I can't. She's not of this time.
Yeah, she's out of her time.
She's out of her time.
Which is just a plot device so she doesn't die. That's all that is.
Well, yeah, but I also liked the, like, okay, cool. This magic does not work on either of them because of these, at least unpredictable to Lilith, like, reasons.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed that because her spell stops the heart but not the hearts. David, yeah. Just one of the doctor's hearts stops. And so Martha has to punch it back into working order.
Which is also very convenient, since the first episode is her bringing the doctor back to life by activating both hearts.
Yeah, so she's learned.
She has
learned. There's a narrative story, and the story is that if you get two hearts going, next time you might only have to get one heart going.
Mm-hmm.
That's how romance works, friends.
Mm-hmm. I didn't write that many notes, and my sign that I enjoyed a thing is when I don't take a lot of notes.
In fairness, I think this episode's also very up your alley.
It is extremely up my alley, so there's lots of other things I could comment on about how much I appreciate that there were no women in the theater, because historically men mm-hmm. always played women, and mm-hmm. in Martha's land of Fredonia, women can be doctors and actors. And
yeah, or one of my I really enjoy where she's like, Martha even points out, those are men dressed as women. Yeah, he goes, yeah, London never changes. Speaking of J.K. Rowling's terrible opinions.
Yeah. And also, drag's like kind of a big deal in the U.K.
Yeah.
Yes, Queen.
Yas, Queen of England.
Oh,
God save the Yas Queen.
We did not touch up on her. I was correct about
the
ending.
Yes, you were correct. At the end of the episode, Queen Elizabeth I walks in and proclaims the doctor is her sworn enemy.
And he doesn't know why.
He does not know why.
Do we ever find out why?
We do indeed find out
why. Oh, hooray. Because I absolutely love, and another thing I always forget is Queen Elizabeth I basically being the Queen of Hearts.
Yeah.
Or rather, the Queen of Hearts is Queen Elizabeth I.
Yeah. Especially the way she looks, anyway.
Well, this one, and she also screams, she off with
your
his,
head.
Yeah, off with his head.
Yeah, you do eventually find out what it was. It's not for a little while, though, so just hold that nugget in your heart.
It's enough time for me to forget.
Yeah, you'll find out in a future story.
But yeah, everything else in this episode, solid. The costumes, very good. A lot of them are extremely simple, but it's also, if you're going for historical accuracy,
mm-hmm.
yeah, there are not a lot of extravagant dyes and colors for things. Everything's just kind of muted yellows and tans and peaches, because that's what you could afford for dye. The only people that really had any sort of vibrant colors were the actors, because costumes would be made and then reused multiple times for different stories.
Yeah. And Shakespeare also gets a different vibe because he's wearing a lot of black.
Yeah, he's wearing the very classic poet shirt.
Yeah.
And black pants and a black jacket, and then he gets the cute little ruff to support his neck.
Mm-hmm.
Which does fucking nothing. That is not a neck support. It just kind of looks good.
There's also another, this is a little nugget I appreciated that was at the very beginning of the episode where the doctor is flying the TARDIS like a maniac the way he does. And Martha goes, don't you have to pass a test to fly this thing? And he goes, yes, and I failed. Which, that's something that I really appreciate about this series, is that, yes, the doctor is a genius by human standards, but by Gallifreyan standards, or at least by Time Lord standards, he's
a mess.
He's a mess. He's definitely clever, and he's able to problem solve, but by like intellectual standards of Time Lords, he's kind of a dummy.
Yeah.
Like he's a
Hey, Zach, he's just a little guy.
Just a little guy. That's why he and the doctor are sworn enemies. They have to decide who is the true little guy.
He's just a little time guy. I'm so excited for the Daleks to come up. I don't know when. I don't know where. I don't know how. Because I'm really angry that we didn't have Daleks in Shakespeare, England. My God, just absolutely destroy the Globe Theater.
Shall I exterminate thee? Shall I obliterate thee into many smithereens?
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks wind?
But soft, what light through window exterminates? It is the east, and the doctor will die by my gun. Well, maybe we'll find out if the Daleks come on next time on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Hey, that was a nice little quick one today, and you could enjoy it tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow. No, but seriously, it was so quick we forgot to point out that Cassie was wrong about the Shakespeare sequel. It was Love's Labour's One, a sequel to Love's Labour's Lost, and now we must exit, pursued by a barely thought-out call to action. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast to get future episodes. Give it a like or 5 stars on your platform of preference. These things help us get discovered by other Whovians via the almighty algorithm. If you'd like to find us on social media, we're on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WimDPod. That's WIMDPOD. If you want to get interactive with this podcast, listen to next week's episode while stuck in traffic, because next week we're watching Gridlock. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.